Following along this morning, we're going to be in the book of Isaiah, chapter 59, starting in verse 9. This man had a very nagging secret that he just couldn't keep any longer. So he went to his minister and he confessed his sin, and he admitted for years that he had been stealing building material supplies from the lumberyard where he worked. "What did you take?" the minister asked him. "Enough to build my own house and enough for my son's house, and houses for two daughters and our cottage on the lake." "This is very serious," the minister said. "You really need some help. Have you ever done a retreat?"
"No, brother, I haven't,"
the man replied. "But if you can get the plans, I can get the lumber." You know, some people, it's kind of hard for them to give up on their sins in life, even when they confess. But we learn that confession is good for the soul, and that it can help us along our way. Now, this section here in Isaiah deals with people's sin, and now it's serious. Their helplessness to change and the effect of their sin become realized by people. So Isaiah has just boldly confronted the people in 59 verses 1 through 8 with their sinfulness, convicting them of that. The people start to awake, and they see their rebellious, wicked condition. So once they understand the damage that their sin has done, then we work on God's victory over that sin. Let's read before we get too far in Isaiah 59, starting in verse 9. "Therefore, justice is far from us, and righteousness does not overtake us. We hope for light and behold darkness, and for brightness but we walk in gloom. We grope for the wall like the blind. We grope like those who have no eyes. We stumble at noon as in twilight. Among those in full vigor, we are like dead men. We all groan like bears. We moan and moan like doves. We hope for justice, but there is none. For salvation, but it is far from us. Our transgressions are multiplied before you, and our sins testify against us. For our transgressions are with us. And we may know our iniquities, transgressing and denying the Lord, and turning back from following our God, speaking oppression and revolt, conceiving and uttering from the heart lying words. Justice is turned back, and righteousness stands afar off. For truth has stumbled in the public square, and uprightness cannot enter. Truth is lacking, and he who departs from evil makes himself a prey." So, as a result of Isaiah's preaching, the people begin to come to their senses. They begin to realize the sin that they're in. And you can kind of think of this as kind of like a revival, where the preacher would come around and they'd have a meeting, and people would gather together on several nights, and he would begin a theme and preach on that. So Isaiah has revealed that to them, kind of like Peter did in Acts 2, when the people realized what they had done, that they had sacrificed their own Savior. Now, the prophet now changes, if you're a follower of English, to first person plural pronoun, us, we, are, to show the identification of the people as them. You know, it's kind of hard. It's easy to see other people's sins, but it's kind of hard to look in the mirror and see ours. And just as we learned in the lesson this morning that Thomas was teaching, you know, sometimes we rationalize what we do and make it okay to do it, when it's just as bad for us as the people we may be pointing a finger at. Now, Isaiah does list the miserable conditions that exist in Israel, and, you know, the society that has forsaken God. It's not a society that's experiencing justice or righteousness at that moment. It's because the people have not behaved in a good and righteous manner. They turned their back on God, and they left him behind. The society was hoping for light, for clarity, for a revival, but they dwelt in darkness. They were like the blind man. They lived in the gloom. We know that Jesus is a light unto our feet that guides the way. And they didn't have real good lights out there. I seen one time they demonstrated just how dangerous it was to get too close in front of the World War II searchlights. Not even postmodern technology, and they held up a newspaper just a few feet in front of it, turned on that light, and it went up in flames right away. So you don't want to get too close to one of those things when somebody lit it up, otherwise you'd get burnt. They didn't have that kind of light back then like we have now. They didn't have strong lights and bright lights that we can light up a room even in the middle of the darkness and see everywhere. They had candles and torches and things like that. And we know what kind of light they put out. It's not really good, even a good light sometimes to read by. Verse 10 continues with that admission of their condition. They stumble about like blind people. They've been trying to gain insight or understand the reason their life is so bad. But their blindness to their situation, which Isaiah points out, reveals that to them. Now they're beginning to see. Like we go to a doctor and he says, oh, you have a condition. We kind of like that. We don't like the doctor to say, well, I don't know what you got. We're going to try this first and try this second. And we'll see how you get in a week or two. People like a good diagnosis, and especially something that can be cured up, and they like that best. But this is what Isaiah is telling them. This is your condition. Your society is rotten right now. You have no justice. You don't have anything good because of the sins in your life. And they needed to confess of that. They saw no open way for relief of their situation. If we shut our eyes against the light of divine truth, it's just as God hides our eyes, you know, away from peace and deliverance. If we seek the good light, and I'm not talking about the riches and that kind of thing, but if we seek peace in our life, you know, good family relationships, good church relationships, our needs met in life, those kind of things come when we walk with God. So when we see our lives and our lives are kind of falling apart, and it's not as good as it had been before, we need to look at our lives. Now, sometimes we're being tested. It may be a test there. And we have a chance to prove Satan wrong. To prove that we don't just follow God because we gain, but because we're following. But it's also a good time to do a little self-examination and look at our lives. Is there something I should be doing? Have I gone off the rails, off the tracks, or what have you? Do I need to come back closer to God? So, bad times are not necessarily a punishment for wrongdoing or not being as faithful as we should, but it's a good time to reflect on our condition and see where we're at. The condition Isaiah confronted with his countrymen was similar to those that surround us today. Violence, deceit, injustice, self-destructive behavior abounded. Isaiah pointed that out in Isaiah 59:3-8. In looking for solutions to their problems, the people resemble a person without eyes, stumbling in the dark. Now, as we look around today in society, it's not all that great, you know, sometimes out there. I know that for the Christian, we generally have good lives and look on the bright side, but there's a lot of violence out there, a lot of crime, a lot of people abandoning God, and you see all that around us. And people wonder why it's so bad. But they never open their eyes and see that they need to return to God. Now, I know we'll never see it, but we'll put on the rose-colored glasses or play Pollyanna this morning and say, well, if everyone was a Christian and did their best, we wouldn't have need of police and things like that. People wouldn't get sick from doing bad things to themselves and others and all this. And you can kind of see where it's going. Now, we'll never have that. We'll never see anything like that until we get to heaven. But you can see that it's society and the ways of the people, the morals and the lack of it, that we're wallowing in the mud because the people first chose to jump in that mud. So, the public reacts to crime today by demanding action. Some politicians will advocate gun control, others urge all law-abiding citizens to have a gun. And all the while, we're spending billions to enlarge our prisons. They only deal with the symptoms. They never deal with society's illnesses. And that's that abandonment of God not believing in God anymore, calling God a myth. In Isaiah's time, the real problem behind the ills of society is their rebellion against the Lord. And when you think about it, it truly is rebellion when people reject God. Adam and Eve, they rejected what God said and took the word of a talking serpent. So, if you're not going to believe the Almighty, but take the word of some critter that shares, you know, whatever, the Garden of Eden that they're in, there's something seriously wrong with you. If we're going to trust God, we need to trust God. We will be in the world. We will be subject to the things that happen to the world. We suffer in storms. People lose their lives in storms. Good Christian people, churches get twisted out of shape by tornadoes or blown down in the hurricanes. And you know, we live in the world, but we don't practice with the world. Someday we won't be living in this world, but in the presence of God. That's what Adam and Eve had in the Garden of Eden. They had the idyllic, beautiful place that God walked with them and watched over them. Their sin separated God from them because He's perfect. And in perfection, He can have no contact with that imperfection. But through Christ, He made it possible that someday, when we leave this earth and I take our place with Him, we'll have that relationship we should have with Him. So we need to, as Christian citizens, so to speak, promote what God says is good and right. And we need to do that as often as the opportunity makes it and practice it in our own life. You know, it's not just something to speak it. It's also something to practice it. We've seen so many times these televangelists get up there and they preach, you know, their form of the gospel and all this, and they try to act like they, you know, they plaster a big smile on their face for an hour or so and try to make it look like they're already living in heaven because of the way they are. And yet, these scandals come out and we find out, you know, just how deceitful they were and how they probably lied to themselves as well as others. That's not the way it should be. So it's not just what we say, but what we practice in our lives. So, the impatience and frustration and stress of their situation that they faced, that Isaiah talked about, they were like growling bears and mourning doves. They cried out for more and they mourned their condition. So we hope for justice today, but there's not a whole lot of it out there sometimes. Sometimes, you know, as the song says, the bad guy gets away every once in a while. So they now recognize their need. They're beginning to come back to God, or realizing that they need to come back to God. And they need to make that confession, just like, again, Peter in Acts 2. What must we do to be forgiven for our transgression? To be forgiven for that. And 11b through 15 is that confession. Verse 12 begins with the confession that they recognize their sinfulness. And that's the thing we need to do. No matter how long we've been in a church, no matter what we've achieved as far as we feel about faith and lack of sin in our lives, we're all sinful, and we need to confess that we're powerless against sin. Now, we're going to wrestle with it, and we, you know, hopefully we're going to overcome some of it, but we'll never be totally free of this world. So we need to realize that first in our lives. The people there recognize why their deliverance is so far away. It's because the multiplied number of their rebellion heaped the coals upon their head. Finally, their iniquities are seen not only by God, but also by the people. So they can't admit that they're trying to follow God, because it's obvious to everyone what they're doing. And that's why in churches, you know, we should make sure that we have a good reputation with the world. Now, the world's not going to like us because we follow God, we come to church, those kind of things. But it's doubly worse if they think, yeah, that church over there, yeah, they got a lot of people over there. You ought to see how they live their life during the week and all that, and what happens there, and the infighting and all that. People see that. They may not like it that you follow God, but at least sometimes they respect it. So they realize that their deliverance is far away. So they look to that and hope for that. And they would be delivered whenever they came back to God. That's been the pattern since the beginning. You know, and people out there will tell you, well, you need to not be so pious. You need, you know, what I've heard, you crazy with Christianity. You need to moderate it a little bit and stuff like that. And, you know, some people might get a little crazy with it in some respects, and, you know, because that's just their nature to be that way. But you can never have enough faith. You can never have enough God. You can never have enough Jesus in your life. God never said, tone it down. Paul never told Timothy or Titus or, you know, James never wrote, hey, y'all need to keep it down. Y'all are a little bit too enthusiastic. That's never a word you're going to find in the Bible. So, the Bible teaches us we can't hide our iniquity. We can hide it from our family, our friends, our other church members. We can, you know, hide it from the closest people we live with. But we're never going to hide it from God. You can be in the darkest room, in the darkest cave, and be as alone as possible. And God is there with you to know what you think and know what you do. So, like Paul told the Galatians in Galatians 6:7, don't be deceived. God is not mocked, for whatever a man sows, that will he also reap. You're not going to fool God by saying, I was good today. First of all, none of us are good in the first place. But we're not going to fool God in that way. We don't mock God that way. So, whatever it is in our life, and whatever our situation is, maybe we kind of feel like the Israelites there, that nothing's going right and everything like that. We need to look at our lives. Is this a test, or do I really need to change in some way? And it's never bad to encourage yourself to even be better than you are. That never hurts either. So, bad situations can be made into good learning lessons for us. So, we need to be honest with ourselves too. We need to admit to ourselves, and if we confess to others, you know, the problems that we have in life, and help in overcoming that. Because prayer helps out a lot in that. The sinful things that people do are often hidden from human view. But Judgment Day will bring to light those things that we have not made right. A fellow named Dion said that. And that's true. We need to make it right with God, whatever it is. Verse 13 in our text, they confess some of the major sins, such as transgressing and denying the Lord, turning away from God, speaking oppression and revolt, conceiving in and uttering from the heart lying words. And that's what goes on today in this world. And, you know, they say the more things change, the more they stay the same. You know, some things may look a little different, but it's all based on the same thing. All based on rebellion and rejection of God. So we see these things. Verse 14 gives the result of the previous depravity of a man of society. Justice is turned back and the righteousness stands far away. They can't get free from their situation that they're in of captivity. You know, when justice knocks on the gate, it's turned back. It's not accepted by them. But if they'll accept God, which they did, they will be returned to the land where our Savior can be born. Now, God chose this, what they call a special people, whereby His Son would be born. But that may have been the line of people, but they certainly did not live an exemplary life in order for Jesus to be born. So, basically they were human. Basically they're like us. So, we have to realize in our lives that there are going to be situations that's probably best be avoided by us. There are situations that if we have to go into it, realize the problems you had with situations like that before, and prepare your heart and pray that you can be better this time in that situation. So, there's all kinds of things we can do to try to live a life that God wants us to live. So, we need to keep those things in mind. Verse 15 indicates how difficult it is to remedy such a society. Yes, truth is lacking, and he who turns aside from evil makes himself a prey. In other words, society doesn't like it when somebody does good things. And right now, this is the latest thing from the atheists. This restaurant was getting a discount if you brought in a church bulletin. Well, they didn't care. It could be from the church, the synagogue, or, you know, the mosque. You know, just bring in a church bulletin, they give you a 10% discount. Well, an atheist is all upset about that. Now, this is a private business doing something like that. So, I mean, I think he's kicking it up with court battles and things like that. If you want to do good in society, somebody's not going to like it. You're not going to be a friend to a lot of people. You're not going to like it that you stand up for God and they don't. You know, the New Testament tells us, and Paul told them, that you're going to judge the world. And we know that only God judges. So what's he talking about there? Well, every time some person comes up there and says, oh, it's too hard, God, I couldn't do it, I had this kind of life and these kind of people around me, God is going to be able to point, just like you take a ruler and say, you give me a foot of this, and you take out a ruler, and you say, you only gave me 11 inches of whatever. I need a whole foot. You're trying to cheat me here. God's going to be able to point to people like you and me and say, they had those same struggles. They did those same things. But they repented, and they kept coming to me, and kept coming, and kept coming, because they wanted to live forever with me in heaven. But you, on the other hand, chose to live your life just the way you wanted. I saw that smile on your face. I knew you enjoyed this or that. I knew you didn't want to follow me or come to church. God's going to know. He's not going to be fooled. So, society, we are its prey. And we are Satan's prey. Paul said, Satan runs around like a roaring lion looking to devour us. So, we're not popular in some circles. We might be popular in church, and with the other churches around, but with the world, we're not their best liked people. We kind of need to get used to that and accept it. We're not going to be able to like some churches, mainstream themselves and make themselves so sanitized that they don't have a message to bring to people, and they don't have a message that convicts people to do better. So, because of Israel's willful, persistent rebellion, the nation became unable to take action against their sin. You know, you get too deep in sin, that sometimes there's just no crawling out of it. When God's truth is pushed out, sin pours in, be it in life or in society. We're going to put something inside ourselves. You know, today it might be a Big Mac, tomorrow it might be a salad, you know. We're going to consume things. And in our mind, we're going to consume things. If all we watch is filth in life, if all we see is worldly things in life, then that's what's going to make up, you know, our heart and soul. But if we fill our life with Jesus, with study and prayer, then that's what's going to come out. And we're going to allow God to mold us into what he wants us to be. To be joint heirs with Christ in heaven. What a wonderful thing. To be with Jesus forever and ever, with God, to see the marvels of the universe, to sing praises unto him, to do what we're going to do forever and ever in heaven. There's a song, I don't remember how it goes too much, but it talks about when we've been there 10,000 years, we've no less time to spend there. What a wonderful thing. When maybe we got 80, 90 years, if you know, if our genes are good and we take care of ourselves, or just sheer luck or whatever, or the grace of God, however you want to look at it, you know, that's not a very long time. Man is but a vapor, and then he's gone. But what we do in that time, that we're just that little short vapor that disappears, affects our eternity. In a reflection, like they did, with Isaiah helping them to see those kind of things. In a reflection on our lives to see what I need to do, what I need to do tomorrow, and how I'm going to grow as a Christian in faith, in spirit, in unity with the body. Those are the things to focus on and be honest with ourselves. Confession is good for the soul. Not really a strong gospel sermon there, but we know that relief for that sin that we confess is through Jesus Christ. And if you have need of Him this morning, we can help you enter the kingdom. Whatever need you might have of the church, once you come, as we stand and sing the song of invitation.